But I think we balance out perfectly. Like, I'll ramble a bit, but then you'll kind of bring us more back on topic. And I that kind of feel like that dynamic works really well.
Yeah, I think our dynamic works really well. I don't know why I'm just repeating what you exactly said, but I agree.
It's one in a million.
One in a million. All right.
I'm good with this if you want to. Yeah, if you want to kick off.
Let's go for it. Today, I got a message. Well, not today. What does it say? November 4th. I got a message from Carrie Carlton, who wanted us to talk about different races in the Dragon Age series. And so I shot that over to you, Jordan, and I thought that was a really fun idea. So, hey, here we are.
Here we are. Yeah, no, I think I also had the same reaction. It's just like when I first, when you first let me know that we had that as a suggestion. First of all, awesome that we're getting suggestions, because I think you mentioned it maybe like on the first podcast we did.
Mm-hmm.
If people had ideas of stuff they wanted for us to talk about, that they should send it to us. And so mm-hmm. awesome that we got the first one. I hope more people send stuff, honestly, because this was a really good one. And I just like the idea that people are being interactive with the show.
Yes.
So definitely, folks, send more ideas if you have them. But yeah, I thought that we would definitely get a lot of mileage out of this topic, so to speak.
Yes. So I thought we'd start off pretty easy. What is your favorite race?
So I know we briefly kind of talked about, like, we hoped that there would be a contrast. I won't mm-hmm. spoiler alert yours, but mine is definitely humans.
Okay.
And I like the fact that maybe that sounds a little bit cliche, because it's like, oh, humans, like, they're the most boring. But I don't know. I guess I kind of like, from a fantasy element, maybe I like the traditional archetype a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But I also just kind of like, even in the sci-fi franchises, even say with Mass Effect, I like the idea of sort of like humans being portrayed as perhaps not as exceptional as, say, you know, like elves in fantasy, or maybe like in the Mass Effect comparison as like Asari or something like that. We're not as mm-hmm. prestigious, we're not as noble, we're not as wise, etc., but we're resilient, we're just kind of plucky. I guess there's probably a part of my personality that tends to like that portrayal of them. And then also, like, I mean, I wouldn't say I do it all the time, but I do like to do like a typical sword and board like warrior in build in like fantasy games, and so that I think mm-hmm. lends well to a human character.
Okay, so you're kind of you like the underdog story.
Yes, and I like that it's both the underdog story and it's a subversion of sort of like the traditional idea, because the human warrior in a fantasy setting should be like the opposite of the underdog. It should be like the prototypical. Character, but then also in the Dragon Age franchise, that's subverted a little bit, so I kind of get to have both. It's like the traditional hero and the underdog.
So are all of your, like, Warden, Inquisitor, Hawk, are they all human warriors? Like, your canon ones?
I always do one, and yes, my canon one for Inquisition is a human male warrior, although I thought at first it was going to be a human female mage, because that was, mm-hmm. like, my first character, but the one that I ended up liking the most was a very, like a very Androstian, very like loyal to the Chantry kind of human male warrior, which I thought was interesting in the setting of Inquisition. But I mean, obviously I like all the other races too, but yeah, I think so. I think my canon Warden is male warrior, and my canon Inquisitor is male warrior. Hawk is male, obviously human, but I think of Hawk as I think of canon Hawk is being a mage, and quite frankly, I think everyone's Hawk should be a mage.
We'll get into that in a little bit. But for my favorite race has always been the elves. I don't know why. No matter what it is, I like the elves. I was talking to my husband about this because he hates the elves. His view on it is that, like, they're so uppity and they're like, oh, well, we're the best race and blah, 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 blah. Which I do think, like, Dragon Age kind of subverts that a little bit, because even though the elves do have that mentality, they're really like down low on the food chain right now. So I guess that sort of works out. But I don't know why I like them so much. Maybe just because they're the pretty ones and I'm a girl and blah, 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 blah. But like, I don't like have a cool story of saying like, oh, they're like the underdog. They're the whatever.
Oh, but the prettiest one is that makes sense though, right? Because aesthetically, they just have a certain look to them.
Yeah, and like, I don't know why. Maybe I feel like the Inquisitor that I have, and you'll see her from time to time. Like, her picture's on my Twitter. She's in a bunch of my videos. My canon Inquisitor, I feel like, is very plain looking. And I feel like a lot of my other elves that I make are very plain looking. So I like plain looking elves. So I guess the subversion is like a pretty race, but she's pretty ordinary. Is that, I don't know. So I this is kind of what I like to do with all the characters that I make, is like make them very average looking and not very beautiful and just look like some asshole on the street you could meet. That's kind of what I've enjoyed doing. And for some reason on elves, that feels the most satisfying. So I don't know what that says about me.
Well, I mean, it probably you appreciate like naturalism, because I've definitely gotten into a little bit of that as well. Like, OK, the Andromeda character creator, very limited. But I was really focused on like making several characters that looked not like models, not like very like flawed. Like I was purposely trying to accentuate certain flaws in any character that I make. Mm-hmm. And I'm definitely starting to do that with all games now. I did it pretty successfully in Fallout, and I've done maybe a couple of characters in Inquisition that are like that.
I think they look more interesting when you do something like that, because instead of just looking like everyone else's model that they're doing, it's like, oh, this is mine because of the weird nose or the big ears or the small eyes or, you know, something like that. It really makes them stand out from the rest of the NPCs, because generally NPCs like have the same, like at least for Dragon Age, like a lot of the NPCs have the same hair and the same facial skin tones that you can choose, but they have very mild and like typical faces. It's your facial structure that you make makes you stand out from the background cast. So I don't know.
Yeah, that's hugely. And then that makes you sort of more attached to your character because they feel more unique. I will say there was one, it's because you said elves and sort of typical looking. This one wasn't typical looking. It was someone who did a mod for a skin texture that they made specifically for their character. And it's a very good looking character, don't get me wrong. Like if you copy all their sliders and everything, like it's a very good looking female elf. But I like how like in the mod description on the Nexus site, like they had this whole story of their elf and what they background they came up with them. Uh-huh. Came up for them, and like the texture, they had optional textures that included like certain scars as well. Like they added scars to the skin texture and like stories behind the scars and everything. And I was
that's really interesting.
That's really interesting when people go that far into it and like make mods and stuff.
And I think that's why I like the Dragon Age series so much, is people like get so into their characters and like they'll do this kind of stuff. Or like is anyone really like? Who in the general population, who really cares about someone just making a mod, throwing it out there? It's like, this is exactly for my character, but I guess you can use it if you want to, and then writing this huge story. But like, it is really cool that someone took the time and do that. And like, it's, I don't know, it's very endearing, I think. But I don't know.
I agree. So, we love, as Dragon Age fans, we love other Dragon Age fans.
Yeah, there we go. So what's your, as a quick question, what's your least favorite race?
I guess by default, it's the Qunari, although I find the Qunari super interesting to think about, but I have actually, this is going to sound bad because I've played Dragon Age quite a few times. As far as Inquisition, I have stopped, I think, on two characters that were Qunari. I've never run a Qunari character as an Inquisitor and finished it.
Really?
I think it was in part because of the... Well, when the game first came out, right, like I was trying to play it on PS4. I didn't play it on PC at first, so I didn't have the advantage of mods. The equipment was very limited. I thought that the way that they modeled the armor onto the Qunari, there really wasn't unique models for them. Yeah. At first, before they had done the patches, I think even the cutscenes were kind of messed up. Like, your head wouldn't fit into the cutscenes.
They still kind of are.
I was so frustrated. Yeah, and I was just so frustrated technically. I just, like, I couldn't get past it.
Mm-hmm. That's fair. I also think that they have... I don't even know how. Like, BioWare hair is notoriously not great, but the Qunari, the like three options and two of them are terrible. Like,
right, yeah.
Like the cornrows, like nothing against cornrows, but it just looks, it's like they took someone who doesn't know what cornrows look like and then they modeled it. It just looks so weird.
I guess it was trying to be a throwback to Sten, but it just didn't work.
No. Even Sten's looked kind of weird. I don't know. I think it was like too spaced out. They need to be closer together. I don't know. I don't know what cornrows look like either. Did they just look strange to me? So my least favorite race is actually going to be the dwarves. And it's maybe it's dating back from Origins when like especially the female dwarves have like these really long lanky arms that look really awkward.
Yeah.
Like I have to mod it every time. And thank God there's a mod for it. But they look like little monkeys. I don't know. Just something about... One in Inquisition, yeah, the camera like cuts off at their nose, and so you're seeing like their nose and their eyes the entire time. But then also like something about like the whole Orzammar attitude just irks me a little bit. Which I don't know why the dwarves being uppity bothers me when the elves doesn't. I don't know, but maybe it's the caste system. Maybe I just think that's kind of like eh.
The caste system's definitely weird, but I guess, the dwarves are, you know, obviously they're not my favorite, but I guess the incarnation of them that is my favorite, I guess, is the Origins one because of the origin story that everybody loves, the political stuff. I ran a dwarf inquisitor. That was fun.
The two dwarf inquisitors I've played are probably the ones I've been least attached to. I don't know why. I don't know what I've done, but I'm just kind of like, on it. So, I don't know. I think the origin stories for Dragon Age Origins are really good. Like, especially the noble was very compelling, and it really like, oh god, I have to go defeat my brother or whatever. And then it turns out your brother's probably the better ruler. He's just a giant prick. But right. Anyway, so I kind of want to talk about a little bit of lore poo-poo, because that's what I do. The origins of the races as we know to say this. Do you know anything about this, or...
Well, I know we talked about the idea of the humans migrating, because we touched on that on one episode very briefly before when we were talking about the history of it. So, no, I don't know it in depth, but I've always found it very intriguing that it is pretty much established that the humans migrated to Thedas, because it's like where from and why, and then all of that stuff, yeah.
Yeah, so that's basically right. So we know the humans came from some, like, they came to Thedas. They weren't native to Thedas, or at least the Thedas as we know it. So I don't know if there is, like, some sort of island somewhere that's human land. But I think the only native races to Thedas are the dwarves / elves. The dwarves underneath, the elves on top. The humans came from somewhere. And then the Qunari, as far as we know it, like... We know they came from across the sea somewhere, but then Corypheus at the end of the game, if you're playing a Qunari, which you didn't experience because you didn't finish the game with a Qunari, he'll yell at you saying like, oh, your race was a mistake. You're a created race, you know, something on the lines of that. Mm-hmm. So somehow Corypheus, who's from Tevinter like thousands and thousands of years ago, before the Qunari came to Thedas, knew what a Qunari was and knew that they weren't a quote unquote real race. They were just created. So there's a legend or whatever that they're related to dragons. Cole mentions that they're dragon horns, not bull horns, which Iron Bull's like, oh, I should have been the Iron Dragon. But so there, I think the ongoing theory is that maybe they're like a half dragon, half elf because of the pointy ears. And somehow the two got mixed together. Maybe it was Andruel, maybe it was Gilanon, connected the two together. And thus we get the Qunari. Everything is theory at this point. The only thing we know for certain is there's some with dragons, and they were created by something. So,
and we all desperately want that to be true. Let's just be honest. We all want elves and dragons to have like a crossover. That would be the coolest thing possible. The problem with that theory is that it's so fucking cool that if BioWare does something else, it's not going to be as good, honestly.
I agree with you. There's definitely something I wanted to, we'll just talk about now. There are so many people who are just fucking sick and tired of the elves, because so far, like, we'll go into in a minute, elves have their like little fingers in every single lore that I can think of. It's at this, the world of Thedas right now is the world of the elves. Everything is about the elves, 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 elves. So like a lot of people who aren't really fond of them, like if my husband was in a Dragon Age, like they hate it. They want the elves to go away. They want the other races to have their time to shine without having the elves going, we are behind it all the entire time. So, yeah. So I think like those people would be like, well, we don't want the Qunari to be half elves, half dragons. So,
yeah, they might. They can just get over that. I think it's amazing. I don't know. I've noticed the discrepancy. Like if you, I'm more casual as like a lore historian, but it just... I get the sense that it writes easier. Like when you're reading through some of the stuff about elves, it just seems as though maybe the writers, it is sort of like that bias that may have been unintentional, but as they were writing up the lore for, say, the dwarves or humans or elves, to me, when I read it, it feels like it would write a lot easier for the elves.
Yeah. And I think also a lot that has to do with it is because, like, right now, Thedas belongs to the humans. It just does. But once upon a time, it belonged to the elves. So what we're uncovering is a story of who owned Thedas before our time, quote unquote, which is the elves. So everything has to do with the elves because that's the history of the world. So if this was the land of the dwarves, this is the land of the Qunari, we'd be uncovering more about them. But right now, it was the world of the elves, and that's why they have their little hands and everything. And like they aren't the heroes in every story, like for the Doors, which we'll segue into that right now. Like, it seems that at one point the elves and the Doors there was a war. For what we know right now, the Doors were somehow connected to Titans, and that's their origin story. And at something divorced the Titans from the Dwarves, and the quote "they've been split in two" has been thrown around everywhere. Mm-hmm. So they were somehow connected in some way, and then now they're not. And the Titans are asleep, the Dwarves are up and doing their own thing, but somehow they're not connected to the Fade. There's something going on with Titans and Dwarves, we're not quite sure. I've always wondered if if you killed Liliana in Origin, she obviously comes back in Inquisition, and everyone's like, okay, I killed her, why is she back? But if you finish Till Trespasser, retcon magic, yeah. If you finish Till Trespasser, she comes back, she leaves. I think it depends, like, on your choices how exactly it happens, except if she's divine, she doesn't disappear. But essentially, she puffs away in a flock of birds, and she leaves a note that says, "Delirium sang thought into being. Now time is stale, and the melody is called elsewhere. Until I am needed, I am free." So, granted, Liliana's body was left at, like, the base of the Sacred Ashes, where all the Delirium was and whatnot. So Delirium could have sung her body and, like, to be fixed again or whatever. But what if it wasn't? Like, her body would have to be, like, I think some of the animations for Origins, she can get, like, her head chopped off and, like, all sorts of stuff.
Oh, wow.
So, like, she could have been pretty fucked up. So what if the Titan Lyrium sang thought into being. The Titan sang thought into being. What if the Titan can sing flesh into being, and that's where the Dwarves came from, I guess is my theory.
So what if they just directly created the Dwarves?
Yeah, what if the Titans actually birthed the Dwarves into what it is now? So the humans are from God knows where. The Dwarves are actually from the stone, from the Titan, mm-hmm. which is essentially what their religion is. We're from the stone, and we will return back into the stone. So
that is super interesting. But I mean, this is going to sound like a very pedestrian question to ask for mm-hmm. what is a very deep and interesting piece of lore, but like, why'd they make him so small?
I don't know. There's actually a quote from Sarah, in Trespasser, if you bring Cole along, he adds something too. Sarah says, like, why do dwarfs make their tunnels so tall if they're so short or something like that?
Great question.
And then Cole has the most interesting dialogue. I'm not going to be able to quote it exactly, but it's something like, oh, well, they used to have mountains that would carve their thoughts into being or something like that. And then Dagna also says something similar where when she has her fate, I just did a video on Titans, so I know a lot about this right now. She was like doing something with Lyrium, and she says she suddenly felt tall, like mountain tall, and she was like carving something into the wall of memories, like she was a shaper. So there's some like evidence that like maybe once upon a time there is shapers were actually very big. So maybe the reason that the tunnels are so big was because these shaper things could move around into it. So maybe that doesn't really answer why the dwarves are so short, but like what if there was some like purpose, like maybe it made them tinier, they can fit into smaller holes, that way if they're escaping something, you know.
Like, that actually could be a good reason, I guess. I guess why I mm-hmm. thought of that is like if the Titans were just creating a species like or a race, like why wouldn't they make them a bit mightier, sort of like the way the Titans mm-hmm. are? I mean, maybe I'm just kind of reading it on the surface, but I remember like the first time I played through The Descent. I don't know. I kind of got the feeling that what they were implicating was just like, no, like the dwarves were Titans. Like you described it in the perfect way, like very, very clinically of like, I like how objectively you sort of handled the theory of like splitting the two. And that's technically what was said. But like, I just let my mind go to the obvious implication of like, oh, dwarves were Titans. And then they were cursed somehow. And they went to the opposite of what they were. They went from being Titans to being small. Again, it's kind of a surface level reading of it, but that's like the most obvious interpretation that I got from it, at least initially.
That could be like really any theory is possible at this point. So I think that definitely Titans at the did you watch Star Trek? You know what the Borg are?
Yes.
Okay, so I think they were kind of like the Borg in that sense, where they all had a collective thought, and like maybe the doors were just like their little, I don't know how, like the Borg people. I don't watch Star Trek. My husband does, so I just hear it from him. But like they could go out, but if like that person dies, like their consciousness are going to come back into the Titan, and somehow that got cut. So that's kind of how I see it, but like that doesn't explain why they're so itty bitty. So
yeah, also the Lyrium saying thought into being, like that's a freaking amazing, just I mean phrase in itself, and I don't even know what to make of that entirely. I think your theory is it could be that that's them sort of giving thought or giving existence to the dwarves.
I think it also needs to be brought up too. It's like, what if like they brought Liliana back and then they need to explain why she came back? This could just be the like devs bullshitting their way into something they wanted to do. So like this might just kind of be something they sweep under the rug in a couple of years. I don't know.
So it is retcon magic is what you're saying.
I'm saying it could be. It could be some cool lore thing, or it's retcon magic. So, or both. Who knows?
Or, you know what? So, I think in all likelihood, it's probably both. It's probably retcon magic. They cooked up something that's just like rife with potential like this, and then they're just going to let it sit there. If they can make good on it, they will. If not, retcon magic.
Retcon magic. Yeah, basically. And then, so on more race origins, and I wanted to finish with the elves. So the elves are, as far as I see it, in my mind at least, the elves are like what coal is that they were spirits of something, and they formed such a consciousness, they were able to turn into what they are now, the elves. There's, I guess my only evidence is that like kind of the interaction between Solas and Cole. And then also in the Vir Dirthara, if you go around, there's a couple of codex entries that talks about the elves and their brethren of the air, which are spirits. So like, I don't know, just them calling them like brethren, like we are similar, we are the same. And then this whole, Solas's whole, not mood, thoughts, actions, viewpoint, there you go, viewpoint on spirits is very like, no, we are equals. Us and spirits, we are the same. We are not that different. So I that's just kind of where I'm getting this from. Now, granted, at one point, Solas says, like, when you question his viewpoints on spirits, he's like, I think you can choose to say something on the lines of, oh, that's a really interesting viewpoint. He's like, oh, thank you. I'm not really used to being heard of because everyone calls me a fool and a madman for thinking these things. So I'm wondering if at one point the elven people did divorce themselves from the spirits that maybe they were or weren't. And Solas was like, no, we have to fight for the spirits because they were our people too. So I'm wondering if maybe that was even something that the elven history had to do with. But
well, I think it could also sort of play into Solas's view of the Dalish, because he doesn't particularly have a very high view of the Dalish. So I think it would stand to reason that if he were to take some of those thoughts or those viewpoints maybe to the modern day Dalish, and they're the ones who sort of rejected it, that could, those two things might be connected, and that Solas himself, or the spirit of Fen'Harel, or both, or however you want to break that down, is at the very least, it seems, even by elven standards, very old. I mean, he comes from the oldest time. He remembers all the way back. And so I think that would stand to reason that you're right, that he remembers the time when the elves did consider spirits brethren, and that's why he has the views he has, tries to take it to the modern day Dalish, and then they, whether they realize it or not, in some sense, even the Dalish have been affected by the rhetoric of the Chantry that you should be wary of spirits because they could be demons, and this is something we need to keep away from ourselves, whereas Solas is like, no, you idiots, like this is our heritage, this is what we came from, you have nothing to fear from spirits. I think that all plays.
So those are racial origins. To sum it up, humans came from here, elves might be spirits, dwarves came from the stone, probably, and the Qunari came from dragons. So the end.
And the elves came from spirits. The elves are still the most interesting. Get over it, people.
Sorry. I don't know. The dragons can be interesting because like they didn't come directly from dragons. They were like forced into the dragon thing. So I don't know. That could be interesting if they ever explore it. I don't know.
Yeah, no. Dwarves, actually, if they make good on dwarves the way that they potentially can, dwarves could end up being the most interesting.
That's true. I think that for a while there, people were thinking that like, what if the dwarves were just like mindless drones? Because that's how the elves talk about them in their documents. Remnants is like the Dorrs are just mindless drones of the Titans. And if that is the racial origin of the Dorrs, that would be kind of boring, at least to me. Because they're not like actual people. Then they're just like these little ants that go around in the. I don't know. Like that would be a really shitty origin story, because then it would be like, oh, the elves gave the Dorrs their freedom. Like, well.
Goddamn elves. They're everywhere.
They'll strike again. So anyway, so another thing I want to talk about is half races in Thedas, and why are they so boring? So if you don't know, if you have, for the most part, we don't know anything about Qunari, so just throw them out of the mix. We have no idea what happens. But for the most part, it's easy to remember. Humans are dominant, elves are passive, dwarves are just whatever. So if you have a human and dwarf, it looks human, as seen as Kieran in Dragon Age Inquisition. If you have a human and elf, it's human. If you have a dwarf and an elf, it's elf. So. Oh, sorry, it's dwarf, but, so yeah, it's, I don't know why. I think the elves as passive almost, like, relates to them being a spirit in a way. I don't really know how that connects, but for some reason in my mind that makes sense. Would you agree?
It does make sense, because they are, well, the Fade is the realm of spirits, right? Mm. And so in the physical realm, there's some, I think it's true to say that there's something about the corporeal or the physical that seems to override things of the spirit in the physical world. In the same mm-hmm. way that the physical reality, like laws of physics, kind of go out the window in the Fade, in the physical reality, matters of the spirit sort of get overridden by physical. It's also interesting that, right, like humans, like genetically, elves are recessive, etc. Like they get overridden if a human and an elf procreate. But mm-hmm. I mean, I'm probably making somewhat of a stretch, but there's also like the idea that that elves refer to the humans as shems, as quicklings, etc., and that when the elves started to even sort of be around humans, they started to age. So there's clearly something about the element of humans that seems to override, like, kind of like what you said, like that spirit aspect of elves. It sort of makes them more mortal somehow.
Yeah, and it's... I don't know. Which one thing on the humans being around elves causing to age, like that could still be true, but the way Solas describes it in Trespasser, like I've always thought like that was like to be funny about it, fake news. But like he says, like it what's his exact words? Like it wasn't the humans that began elves aging; it was me. And then he describes what he did to the Vale. But I do, like, when you bring it up that way, I wonder if, like, yeah, the Vale didn't help, but what if the humans somehow worsened it? So.
Well, okay, so then maybe we put all two of those theories, three of those theories, right? So, because mm-hmm. we said, like, okay, elves are genetically recessive, and then I said, mm-hmm. well, maybe that's related to the fact that humans are sort of thought of as quicklings, and they somehow made the elves start aging, and then mm-hmm. you said, there's Solas's comment saying, no, I did that with the Fade. But that, I think, relates back to what I said earlier, right? Because the Fade is a separation, or I'm sorry, the Veil is a separation between the Fade and the physical world of Thedas. So mm-hmm. maybe that's what I was trying to say when I said that the physical seems to override the element of spirit outside of the Veil, outside of the Fade.
Oh, okay. So that's
what he meant when he said, I did that. By creating the Veil, he created the purely physical world in which spirits are sort of overwritten by corporeal things.
Okay, I get you now. Okay. No, I like that.
At least it could make sense. Like you said, all theories are just theories. They could be true, but that kind of feels like it fits.
That does fit, yeah. So let's bring back Qunari into this half-race thing. So earlier we talked about, like, or there's a theory going on that elves plus some weird dragon bullshit equals the Qunari. So in this equation, what would a half Qunari, half, let's say, human? Would it have more human features but still have, like, the dragon horns and the skin tones? Or would the Qunari, or would it be more Qunari, or would it just be human? Like, would it lose everything? You would think that the, like, the dragon elements of it would maybe carry forward at the same time. Like, if it is part elf, then perhaps that would be faded away. Or would if the elf fade away, then everything falls apart?
That's super interesting, right? I guess it's like we already know what happens if, yeah, you're right. If we take the theory that elves are just sort of like elf or dragon, they're mixed, or Qunari are elves and dragons,
mm-hmm.
we know that human overrides elf, but what the hell does human do to dragon?
mm-hmm.
Presumably not override it, because you would think that dragon would just override everything.
That's true. There, I know if you, oh, what's the, especially, oh, Reaver. If you become a Reaver and you talk to Cassandra, because Cassandra, the Pentagost family, has a long line of, like, dragon hunting and, like, drinking dragon blood and doing whatever. But apparently she says, like, there are stories of people in her family who were Reavers long enough and drank dragon blood long enough that they started to grow scales and, like, were very violent and other such features. So some people think, like, oh, that's where the Qunari are from, but more advanced or whatever. So I think I'm also going to use this as a segue to go into the other races in Thedas that we might not know about. What if the scaled ones are the human version of what happens when you mix dragons plus whatever?
Oh, I like that.
So if you don't know what the scaled ones are, they've only been mentioned, I think, only in the the Descent DLC. There is a codex entry that talks about a Forgotten War. And it's just an account of an unknown dwarf going through the deep roads, fighting a war with the scaled ones, which you don't really know what they are. And it talks about him seeing them being extremely, like, apparently these things live in the deep. They don't know what it is. And they're described as having, like, they look very scaled, and I think they say about, like, as tall as a Tivinter human. And there was, like, male and female of the races that was mentioned, and there's magic and, like, blood magic and rituals and all sorts of weirdness going on. And, like, we don't know what that was. And apparently this dates back to, at the very least, when Tivinter and the dwarves were in sync with each other. So no idea what that is. But if that is perhaps the human version of the Qunari, I think that would kind of make sense. That the Qunari aren't really, because it is said that the Qunari, well, the Qunari isn't a race because the Qunari is a religion, whatever, but the Kossuth or whatever you want to call it. Like, what if that's not really a race so much as it is a modifier? So what if the, like, dragon elf is Qunari, the dragon human is the scaled ones? Maybe there's even a dragon and a dwarf that we don't know about.
Right.
So
I guess I like that theory. And then the alternative is just they're sort of just like a really deep dwelling race that sort of no. So I guess if we play off the idea of them being a created race also, or them being like human plus dragon, I guess the real question then is, like, how did they get there? Like, why are they so far underground?
I don't know.
Did whoever created them put them there as a way to be like, this was a mistake, we're just going to shove it underground and try to forget it happened?
Maybe. There is the one other thing that people attribute to the scaled ones is that there's a bunch of, like, art around the world of Inquisition that you can just come across. And there is one of just a giant fucking lizard dude. Like, what else is that? So people are like, oh, that has to be a scale one. And, like, you know, I kind of agree with it. Like, what else is, like, it's an honest lizard dude. Like, if you know Dungeons & Dragons, it just looks like a dragonborn. Like, it has, like, a tail, and it looks like a lizard dude. So I don't know if, like, the scaled ones are just actually fucking lizard dudes, or it is this cool theory. I will say, though, as we go on, there's, like, two other races that aren't the normal four. I kind of like just having the four, and I don't really like the idea of there being other races.
It would be hard for them to integrate even one more. Like, if you think about the fact that we've already got the established ones, if they came out in the next Dragon Age game and they did it as anything other than, like, a novelty, like, say we meet the last of the scaled ones or something like that, that might work. Mm-hmm. But if they tried to fully integrate another culture and another race, I don't know how well they could do that.
Yeah, and I think it also, like, in terms of, like, gameplay mechanics, then, one, that's a whole nother thing you have to model. Yep. Like, that's exactly a whole nother thing. And if the scaled ones do have a tail, like, what has a tail in the Dragon Age series? Nothing so far. That is a completely new model that they have to build. And then also, if it's not the last of their kind, there are going to be people saying, I want to play a scaled one in the next game. And they're going to be like, well, shit, we've done the other four. Why can't we do a scaled one? And then what if there's not, there's obviously not a lot of scaled ones in Thedas. So if you play a scaled one in the next game, that's probably going to break things. So I feel like, If they do other races, they're either going to have to be extinct, like you kind of said, or it's sort of like the scaled ones, or are like the Qunari but human versions, where it's like kind of like how Mass Effect, all of the aliens for the most part are like human based but with a weird head.
Right,
like, it's going to have to be something like that.
And you're right. So I'm glad you brought up the practical element of modeling, because I feel like that was a real limitation for why they didn't do more in Andromeda. Mm-hmm. And then also with the player character, like, I mean, not to get too much off topic, but, like, I think they should even get rid of the Qunari, because to me, from a lore perspective, like, every time someone sees me as a Qunari, I think there should be a conversation about it. Because it's like, what are you doing here? Why are you not following the Qun? Like, okay, you're, I'm brain freezing. The Qunari who aren't Qunari.
Talvashoth.
Talvashoth. Okay, sure, but, like, I wanted more race-specific dialogue options. I know there are some. I relished it every time, especially with the elves. Like, I felt like it was very appropriate. Sometimes with the dwarves. Not as much with the Qunari, I felt like. I don't know if anyone's done an analysis. Yeah. But I'm like, if I'm going to be able to play a Qunari, I want to be able to play a Qunari a lot more. So never mind if they introduce, like, say, a scaled one. Like, I want unique dialogue options almost all the time. From a resources standpoint, they wouldn't be able to do it.
Yeah, like, I don't know how true this is, but at least what I've heard is that Inquisition was made with a human in mind. And they were only going to do a human until they got an extension, and that's when they added all the different races. So, and I think it really, really shows a little bit. Because, like, with elves and humans are pretty much the same height, and so they look pretty equal.
Mm-hmm.
And it's pretty easy to exchange them. They have a couple of Dalish options and whatever. But for the cameras, for the Qunari and the dwarves, it's just, like, for the Qunari, it's, like, nose down. And then for the dwarves, it's, like, nose up. It's right. Just... And it happens all the time, and it's awful. And I don't know why, like... Is it really that hard to fix the camera angle? I don't know. It gets really annoying after a time. I think maybe that's why, like, I agree with you. Yeah, the Qunari and the dwarf playthroughs, you're like, oh, I wish I could see my face.
You just kind of, yeah, you start to identify with your character's chin, basically, with the Qunari.
Yeah, I hope you really like the armor you pick, because you're going to be seeing a lot of it.
A lot of it, exactly.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, so next race I want to talk about is the Fire Sprites. This is one that's only in the tabletop game, and I feel like we're never going to hear about it, but I feel like it is kind of interesting. And I will say that I do videos sometimes that people are like, oh, but what about the thing from the tabletop game? And like, maybe I should have mentioned it. But I feel like the tabletop game is almost a whole nother thing from the games itself, because there's just a bunch of stuff in there that I think almost doesn't mesh with the game series.
Yeah.
Like, as a tabletop on its own, I think it's great. It's fun. I've not had the pleasure of playing it, but, like, I think it's almost its own thing in a way. So the little bit about the Fire Sprites that I was reading about, they're really weird. So it's like these... So think of, like, a sprite. You know, they're tiny, they're glowy, they're naked, whatever. Apparently they have compound eyes. Like, compound eyes creep me out. So, like, that imagery is like, ooh, that's weird. I don't like them. But they have some sort of sentience, but they don't talk. They just sing, like a humming noise, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
Which I pulled up a description of them singing. It's something like, they fly around each other while singing a haunted melody that melds well with the raindrops pelting the swamp. Like, so it's very, like, ethereal and natural sounding, apparently.
Hmm.
And apparently their singing can affect your mood and your thoughts. So they're, like, singing thoughts into your head, and they communicate that way, where, like, the song reminds you of this really random imagery, and that's what they wanted to say to you.
Oh,
sort of
nice
thing. So that's kind of interesting. But apparently, like, the fire sprites are specifically from a pre-made adventure for the Dragon Age tabletop, and the whole adventure, actually, I don't remember what tribe it is, but some human tribe is sick with something. I think it's called, like, Amber Rage. I didn't read on it because I don't care, but essentially, your PCs have to find the cure for this disease, and this cure is some sort of moss, and you go off, and you realize that the fire sprites eat the moss, and that's the only thing they eat. And there's only one colony left of these fire sprites, and they're guarded by this, like, grand serpent thing. And then it's described that the grand serpent also has, like, these weird legs that are tiny. And you realize that the grand serpent is one special fire sprite that has grown to be, like, this just giant fucking snake. And it, like, there's some description that it kind of, like, what the moss that the fire sprites eats is essentially the shit from the guard, like, the serpent. It's really bizarre. So, like, you kill the serpent, and you're like, oh shit, I just killed their source of food. And then the fire sprites will have all this moss that they can live off for a while. And, like, the choice in the game is, do you kill the only remaining fire sprites to save these human people, or do you leave the fire sprites alone? So I think with that alone, that your player characters in this tabletop game have the option to kill the last remaining fire sprites is a little, like, we're not going to see them in the game. And if we are, it's going to be, like, really small. We're not actually going to see it modeled. It's going to be in a codex entry, if anything. So
that is, first of all, that's super interesting. I know we talked about the fire sprites a little bit before, but that honestly makes me really want to see the fire sprites in a game. Like, even though, like, you just outlined how it's not possible, in my head I'm like, no, they eat the corpse of the serpent, and then one of them reemerges like a phoenix, like it, one of them rebirths the serpent, and then there's a new serpent. Maybe. I don't know, they can come back there somehow.
I only skimmed over the adventure because I'm like, all right, I don't need to know about fire sprites, I don't need to read all of it. But from what I gathered, there was something about, like, they couldn't make another serpent for some reason. I don't know, like, it was the way it was written made me think that, like, this is the last one and it's going to be the last one. They are dying. It's just how fast. But maybe I'm wrong, I don't know.
No, that would make perfect sense again, like, always from that practical implication of some overarching person, you know, managing all of this lore in the Dragon Age franchise, probably gave license to some writer who was in charge of the tabletop game and said, look, you can do whatever you want, just make sure it's a closed loop. You know what I mean? Like, do whatever you want inside of the tabletop story. You want to do this crazy fire sprite thing, that's fine. Just close it off so it's contained within the tabletop story. Yeah. But still, when you were talking about the way they communicate with the songs and everything, I'm like, that is something that begs to be seen in a audiovisual medium. Because, like, can you imagine the lights, like, the visual of it while they're singing to a character? And then imagine as a producer or creative director in the next Dragon Age game, getting to sit down with Trevor Morris and going, like, give me, like, a series of songs that would communicate to someone feeling, like, sporadically, like, quickly, like, the character actually having a conversation with a group of fire sprites and then hearing what that would sound like.
Oh, man, I thought these were, like, really fucking stupid. You just made it cool. Now I'm sad about it. Like, I was not in these fire sprites until you described that. I'm like, oh, fuck, that's pretty dope.
I'm like, that would be a great cinematic moment to see, like, visually. It's like a sound, because, like you said, it sounds like nature. So it's like a sound design plus, like, music. And I'm like, these fire sprites, I'm like Team Fire Sprites now, man.
Damn, you got me on Team Fire Sprites. I'm kind of angry now. Like, I thought these things were awful.
All right, people, we have to get some audience participation. Okay. Like, Fire Sprites yes or Fire Sprites no? Hit it down in the comments below. Whether or not you want to see Fire Sprites in a game or no, they sound stupid.
Oh, man. I mean, you know what? We're going to, audience participation, you say what you like. I'm down with Fire Sprites.
You can do it on Twitter also. I don't know how I feel. Hashtag Fire Sprites yes or hashtag Fire Sprites no.
Hashtag justice for fire. Make fire sprites great again. Like, all right. Anyway, okay. We got one last race to talk about, and it's the Fex. From what I have been able to find, there is only one quote, and that's all we know on the Fex. And I'm just going to read it right now. This quote is from 7 years ago, I think, and was at least the video I saw was from 7 years ago. It's from when I think it was Dragon Age 2 was like in its not development cycle, but in like the media cycle where they're showing promos and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And at the time, the lead writer David Gator had some sort of like live stream where people would ask questions, and he would just very like impromptu like answer the question. He would wait for a question and answer it. And one that was asked was, are there any other races in Thedas other than the ones we know? And this is exactly what he says. Yes, there are. For instance, there's a race that was native to Parvalon when the Qunari arrived that we've not shown yet. They're called the Fex. You don't see them outside of Parvalon very much, but yeah, there definitely are. And maybe there's even some beyond Thedas.
Oh, snap.
So, the longest time I thought, like, before I heard this quote, the only thing I knew of the Fex is that they're of Parvalon. And when you read of Parvalon, at least in the world of Thedas books, it talks about, like, there's pyramids on Parvalon that were built by humans. So I just assumed the Fex was another human tribe, like the Avar or the whatever. But he says here it's actually another race. So I'm wondering if this is going to come back, or is this just a thing that, like, listen, we got four, we don't know how to model it. Maybe it's even the lizard. Maybe the scaled ones are the Fex. We don't know.
Right.
But so we know, like, literally all we know is this quote right here. This is it. This is all we have.
And that's the thing. It's like, it's super interesting, but also the fact that it's super old. It's like, you never know if this is just something that did exist as a possibility 7 years ago that he was voicing, but they just don't know how to do anything with it. So they're not.
Yeah. I would also wonder if, like, maybe, like, if the Fex do come back, we're not going to see them because they're dead. Like, the Qunari have conquered Parvalon.
Right.
They might be gone. So, I don't know. It's weird.
It has great potential, though, because it has great potential, but I always think, like, yeah, it had great potential 7 years ago, so that means maybe they just aren't going to do anything with it. But the fact that he says when the Kunari arrived, that we've not shown yet, like, the word yet is very promising, and then mm-hmm. just the tail end of it going, like, and maybe there's some beyond Thetis. Like, first of all, just beyond Thetis is interesting, and then mm-hmm. considering we know the humans came from beyond Thetis, like, what else is out there? So, like, that one little paragraph has a lot of potential, but how much of that do they really have the time or resources to make good on?
That's true. Well, I know that they talk about the Dragon Age series, like, I think they have like 5 games planned at the moment, which I think Dragon Age Inquisition was supposed to be 2 games, so I think Dragon Age 4 and Inquisition are supposed to be like one giant thing. That's at least what I've heard. I don't know how true that is. So they have planned out 2 other games other than Dragon Age 4, but after that, they're still, like, could go on. Like, they're leaving it open. Like, kind of Andromeda. Like, they're leaving it open to do other things. I guess at that point, it wouldn't be Dragon Age, because I think the age of the dragon, the ninth age, would be over, so that it would be whatever age. But, like, it wouldn't surprise me if, like, the Dragon Age series, as we know it, will be from the actual Dragon Age is the story of Thetis, and we can do whatever we want. Maybe we choose at the very end to bring the veil up or down or whatever. And then the next game series is, like, I don't know, whatever the next age is, the veil got torn down age, and, like, the new game series is set across the ocean of Thetis, and, like, there's still some same elements, but, and it's the same world, but it's different races, different people, whatever, because there are talk about in the lore right now, people going across the ocean to wherever it is where Thetis isn't, and just not coming back. Like, what happened? And there's also those across the sea from the Inquisition, if you remember. For our very first episode, we talked about that.
That is, yeah, I mean, that's, you're right. That is, like, has such great potential. The only thing that I think about from a time aspect is, even if there's 5 games, like, that seems mm-hmm. like a lot of time. But for those people who follow the Elder Scrolls series, it's just like, you know, like, they've really been taking their time with Tamriel, and it's just like, once you learn that there's something beyond Tamriel, like, Tamriel's not even the total of the thing, and there's, like, that mm-hmm. that element of, you know, also same thing, characters leaving Tamriel and never coming back within their lore also. And they've yeah. been, you know, it's been Elder Scrolls games now for 20 years, and we still haven't gotten beyond Tamriel.
Which, yeah, when's the next Elder Scrolls game that's not the fucking card game or the... Yeah. There's a card game, right? Yeah, and the MMO multiplayer one.
We don't know. All it is Todd Howard going, it's so great, we're waiting for technology to get better. Which is like, that's so amazing to hear him say that, but it doesn't help. It just means it's going to be a long fucking time.
On the meantime, you could buy Skyrim on the Switch for $69. You're right. Anyway. Did you see someone modded Skyrim for the 3DS?
I'm sure they did. I mean, I'm sure they did.
It's like really low quality, and it didn't look any like there were any people around, but they were playing Skyrim, and like, I don't know, that maybe left. Whatever.
Plot twist, it's a Bethesda employee who's on a secret mission to see how much people wanted on the goddamn 3DS. They're going to do it in 5 more years. God. Watch.
Oh, I think the only things that Skyrim isn't on is like the Game Boys and like tablets and iPhones. I think that's it, isn't it?
I just don't like the thing that like everyone keeps. I love Skyrim. I've played hundreds and hundreds of hours, but I feel like it in some sense it ruined RPGs because it was such a great financial success that it became this make it like Skyrim. It's the That's most true, profitable yeah. RPG ever. It's like they released it 7 times. Like if you just keep re-releasing Inquisition, I'm sure it'll make money too.
I don't get, yeah, I think that, I agree with you that I think we're on a whole different topic now. I think Rabbit Skyrim trail. Skyrim did ruin RPGs a little bit because now everything has to be open world. And like, there's a lot of trash. Like, I think right. Inquisition suffered from the open worldness. I think Andromeda suffered from the open worldness. Oh, big time. So like, I think that I'm wondering what the next gaming craze is. So I think we're still we're on the tail end of open world. I'm wanting to know what the next one is. I'm wondering if it's going to be VR because I want some good VR games because there's some pretty bad ones right now. But whatever. Anyway, let's go back to it. Right.
So we have okay. So that actually makes me think we might have to do that as a separate episode. What you just said. What's the next craze in gaming? Because whatever Maybe. It is, EA is going to chase it. Okay. So last few topics we wanted to do were race interactions, right?
Mm-hmm. So everyone hates the elves, like, pretty much.
No, Reddit hates the elves.
Well, no, in world they hate the elves too, pretty much.
Oh, like, yeah, that's true, I guess.
Yeah, the dwarves, I currently the dwarves and the elves have no beef, but there was at one time a war with the elves and the dwarves. I think it's so old and both cultures have been so degraded that no one like even remembers it. So like they just kind of like let live and let live for the most part, because the elves are what they live in hovels now. It doesn't really matter.
Right.
But the humans and the elves are, they're the ones definitely at war, like Tivinter, like even though they didn't destroy Arlathan, they did like put the nail in the coffin, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And like they enslaved the race and whatever, and like everyone now poo-poos the elves. So there's that element. And then Qunari want to control everything. That's just their, that's just not their race, that's their religion, that's what they want to do. So you have this thing of the elves trying to claw, like the current racial climate as it is in Thedas currently is that the humans are at the top. They own everything. The dwarves kind of are secretly trying to, if we're okay, let's pretend this is a Civ game. The dwarves are going for the economic control. The humans already have control. The elves are trying to, they're trying to actually just do direct war with the humans. They're trying to claw back what they once have. And then the Qunari are going for the cultural win by spreading the religion everywhere. That's what they're doing. So this is kind of what the current climax like. Would you agree, disagree?
I would agree, and I think the Qunari are kind of the most interesting to me, right? Because we're talking about the implications of the different races, but you're right, it's this cultural religious thing that they're trying to do. It's this righteous conquest in their mind to spread the Qun. And what the idea that came to mind is obviously the idea of them like proselytizing so that they're gaining converts to the Qun. We've seen Elven Qunari. Our friend Felicia Day, of course, in the DA2 DLC. But it's like, it's very interesting that like it for the most part is a race discussion, because it's mainly like the Kossuth who are the predominant adherents to the Qun. But like theoretically, could the Kossuth go away, like somehow be extinct in some war or something like that, and yet the Qunari, quote unquote, continue on because the Qun spreads that far? That's what's really interesting to me about that, is that it is cultural.
Probably. I would be like, I'm really hoping in the next game we get to see more of Parvallan and the Qunari like homeland. I would be interested to see if like maybe if some of the higher ups in the Qunari culture aren't the Kossuth, but maybe like, I don't know if you know much about the structure of the Qunari religion, but there's three leaders other than the Aerishok. There's one with like, the Aerishok's the one that is war. There's one with like cultural and one with religion, I think. I can't remember their names. But like, if one of them was like an elf or even a human, I think that'd be interesting.
That would be interesting. Another thing I was thinking of is, what if the elf dragon connection is true, and say it were to come to light within Thedas, would there be certain, I don't think maybe Dalish, but would there be like city elves who kind of start to feel a connection to the Qun, or to maybe like Kossuth, the Qunari? Oh. And then there's like this split amongst the elves of like more Dalish versus, you know, the city elves who kind of struggle for an identity anyway, start to be like, hey, like the Qunari are like us plus dragons, like maybe this Qun thing is what we should be following. And then you've got like the elves starting to like, a huge amount of elves go to the Qun.
More than they already are. That's a really good question, actually. Wow. So yeah, that makes me wonder if the next game isn't really going to, like, it's in Tivinter, but it's not really about Tivinter. Perhaps Solas is going to wage a war on the Qunari, just for the insult alone of what it is. And then also, like, the Qunari have a pretty big population of elves, just because the slavery thing. And then if that's true with what you just said, that would be a really easy way to get them in.
Oh, it would be even better if like it is true somehow some of the Kossuth, like the upper leaders, like the Aerishok and the other leaders in the Qunari, know that it's true, and it's like this really clandestine thing, like Bull talks about, like the conditioning program, like people being sort of re-educated or reprogrammed, like what if it's like one of these things, like maybe converts, non-Kossuth Qunari, are held to this really high standard of, like, once you've been conditioned enough and you're an elf, like, they take you into the secret room and they reveal the truth to you, sort of thing. Like, maybe that's why there are already more elves who follow the Qun, because they have been shown the truth. I mean, that's, like, a wild speculative theory.
Maybe.
But, like, that would be so cool if somehow the Kossuth Qunari actually knew that it is true and they have proof and they show it only to the elves that are most committed to the Qun.
Maybe. We already kind of have, as much as I was not fond of Mark of the Assassin, we already have, like, a character that could come out and tell us, be like, I'm a Canary, and I've been through this process, and I know this truth, because I was there. We already have someone that could potentially have that knowledge.
Right. And plus, what's Felicia Day doing now, right?
Yeah, well, she had a baby recently, so I think she's been all baby mode. Which, like, good for her.
Congratulations, Felicia Day.
But, yeah. But what has she been doing? Felicia Day was like the love of the internet, and she just, like, I guess, which, good for her, live her own life, have a kid, whatever, great, but just kind of disappeared. Like, you don't hear much from her.
Yeah, she was the queen of the internet for a while there. Like, I feel like in nerd culture that happens a lot, where, like, some person has a huge moment of, like, nerdiness where they're, like, just, mm-hmm. like, they're on top of it, and then it kind of fades away. Maybe she'll come back with something new in a few years.
I was about to ask, like, oh, who do you think is the current queen of the internet? But we don't got time for that. We're already running out of time.
So we've given the Kinari their due, like, dwarves, elves, like you said. I kind of feel, I mean, obviously that's, like, the current state now, right? It's like the dwarves just live underneath. I don't know. I kind of feel like the dwarves are just kind of isolationist. And like, there's probably a huge portion of the dwarves that aren't really worried in the modern setup of Thedas, of who's ruling what, as long as they control the underground, as long as they control Orzammar, that's all they care about.
Mm-hmm. Which I agree, but the what happens about the surface dwarves? Because they don't care. They have surf. Like, is there a town of just surface dwarves? Like, so far they're just kind of integrated everywhere. But, like, is there some, like, just town or steadfast hold or whatever? There was a word there I wanted. I don't know where it was. But where dwarves are the predominant race on the surface. That's kind of what I've always wanted to see. But
are dwarves, is that the case because dwarves are just more pragmatic in a way? Because, like, if you actually think about it, like, the city elves, I would assert, and, you know, I think somebody said in one of the comments that, like, I was being hard on the elves, and I think I am kind of hard on the elves. Somebody said that in one of the comments, like, I think Jordan's just being kind of against the elves. In a way, I think I am. I don't know why, that's just my view. It's kind of, I like the fact that I have my biases. It makes it more interesting. Yeah. But in a way, like, I would say that the city elves are not integrating properly. Granted, they're being discriminated against and their entire civilization got wiped out. But because of that, it's not their fault per se, but they're having a hard time integrating into the mixed culture of Thedas. The Dalish are willfully not integrating and trying to preserve what was wrongfully taken from them, etc. The Orzammar dwarves want nothing to do with it. They're kind of isolationists. But I kind of feel like the characters that are surface dwarves, like Varric and like some of the others, they've got what I would interpret as a very pragmatic view of the surface, which is just like, we're not trying to make dwarven culture up here. And we think it's kind of silly that anyone would try to make any culture. It's like, I'm a dwarf. Like, do you want goods and services? Because I'll sell that to you if you're a human or a dwarf or an elf or a Qunari. Like, I don't care. I'm here to do business. And, like, I'll just do whatever it takes. And so maybe the reason why we don't see as much, like, dwarven pride, so to speak, on the surface is like all the dwarves who come to the surface are more there just because they don't like the walled garden attitude of dwarves in Orzammar. So they're like, I came to the surface to get away from the idea of dwarven culture being this amazing thing that needs to be whatever. Maybe.
I think that's, like, kind of the basis of all of Solas and Varric's dialogue or banter. Like, there is an element of Solas, like, why don't you want to be with your people? And Varric's like, why the fuck do I have to?
Right, exactly.
So, and I think that's also what Sarah's all about. And everyone poo-poo Sarah. Like, there's people like, oh, why do you poo-poo Sarah? It's because she's a lesbian girl. No, it's because she's written, like, I get it. She's a bit annoying. I love Sarah to death. Bit annoying. But, like, I think that's also what Sarah's about. Like, she just wants to be Sarah. She doesn't want to be an elf. She doesn't want to be have that all that culture and history behind her. She just wants to be, like, what you just said with, like, the dwarves. Like, just wants to integrate with society and just be like, fuck it, whatever. So
that's actually so interesting that you mentioned Sarah again, because I completely agree with you. And it's funny because I mentioned this on an earlier episode where, like, the run through where I was most annoyed with Sarah was when I played the very Dalish, like, loyal to the Dalish elf, because she throws it in your face. And she's so she is kind of funny. Like, she gets some really good jabs in there about how elfy you are. And so I hated her during that playthrough. But the one playthrough when I liked her the most was when I played a dwarf who was also like, dwarven culture, whatever. So they, like, bonded over that kind of thing. So that was, like, a good call for Sarah. Yeah, she kind of represents that.
Indeed. Well, one thing I wanted to talk about, I hope we have time. This might be a long episode. Sorry, guys, buckle in. But should romances be race locked?
No, but that's such an interesting question. Like, I feel like the answer for me personally is automatically no, but it is a really interesting question.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, at least for me personally, I thought the Iron Bull romance was, like, I don't know if that was just the romance or him, but I wasn't really into it as much as, like, the other ones. I think, is Iron Bull the only non-human / elf romance? I think it is, because there's no dwarf. Yeah, he's the only Canary. So.
Yeah, so, and I guess, I don't know, I guess, it's like a homeboy. Freddie Prinze Jr., like, he does a great job playing that role, but I just feel like it's all very... he does a great job, but he's more comedic than anything. I think it was a tough call to ask him to be in this one particular mode for that character and then have a romantic subplot for that character arc. It felt forced.
It's been so long since I played the romance, I don't even know anymore. But
I only watched it in cutscenes. I don't think I ever romanced it. I think I watched the cutscenes.
Oh really?
Yeah.
I don't remember it feeling forced, but I do remember feeling it being very physical, I feel like a lot of the other romances played into it being about, like, the connection between you and that person, and then the Iron Bull romance was 90% of the time it was like sex.
Yeah.
But, like, there was a connection there a little bit, but, like, it was this kind of, which I think this is why people get drawn into it, because there was that hint of, oh, there's some actual feelings here, quickly covered up by, like, but sex and humor.
Right.
But, like, I think, like, being a therapist myself, there are a lot of people there that cover up those deep emotions with just, like, very, like, humor and all sorts of stuff. So it's very relatable in that sense, that there is something underneath, and then you every once in a while just kind of peek out, but, like, for the most part, you cover it up because you're shy about it. You're scared of it. You don't want to get hurt again or whatever. So I think that's why people like the Iron Bull romance. Me on my own, I'm like, nah.
That's a really interesting take on the Iron Bull romance. Like, you just brought out something interesting about that, whereas before, I was just like, I'm like, yeah, it's really surface level. Like, Iron Bull is, you know, he's down to fuck with everybody pretty much. Like, and so he just kind of gets fitted into that slot. But I'm like, no, you're right. There is an element of depth there. And, like, that absolutely fits and is consistent with who his character is.
This all of the Inquisition romances I think are probably the better romances in the series, but I think a person who wrote Iron Bolt, same person who wrote Solace, and I think they have that same little twinge in there. It's like there's a lot of cover-up, but, like, if you look really closely just behind the door, there's that little bit of heart there that screams that they love you, but they can't really express it quite right. And that dream brings a lot of people in, especially with the Solace romance, because holy shit, Solace mancers are crazy. But me being one of them, but I think Iron Bull, like, there's not as many fans, but those that really are into the Iron Bull are into the Iron Bull. So,
well, Solace almost sort of, like, just begs for introspection. Like, if you're interacting with Solace, whether you're romancing him or not, he's so, I don't know if brooding is the right word, but, like, that's a character that just, you really want to think more about what he's saying. Bull, like you said, is almost like the total opposite. Like, he's brash and he's sort of dude bro-esque. But what's interesting about it is, you're right, there is so much more under the surface if you think about the way he interacts with his team. Like, there's a lot of that machismo culture also, but there's also, like, deep bonding there as well.
Yeah.
With the Chargers,
I completely agree. And I think that's why a lot of people miss that little heart there, because, like, they just see the drunken charger song when you get a drink beer with him at the bar after defeating the dragon. He talks about masturbating to the thought of defeating the dragon. Yes. You're like, okay, I guess this is happening.
That was one of the most bizarre epic scenes ever.
I'm trying to, in my mind, decide, like, is that the most awkward scene? But I think overall that's going to win out to Liliana singing in camp, because that was really awkward for me for some reason. Like, in Origins, do you remember that?
Yes. Well, also, yeah, a little bit. It was.
I don't know why that overall was kind of like, ooh, cringe. I don't know why that did that for me. Also the sex scenes in Origins. I know, like, there's a bunch of great mods there that do all the sex things, and, like, they're, like, really explicit, by the way. Fans, wow, you guys love your sex scenes with Alistair. But, like, I thought the sex scenes in games really awkward. I much prefer, like, maybe, like, take off the clothes and fade to black. I don't need the thrusting. Right. I don't need the moans. I don't need the faces. Gets weird.
Well, it's just like pixel mannequins mashing together. Like, it was just awful in Dragon Age Origins. And I will say,
yeah,
they were so bad. It's just like, and the mods made it worse. Okay, they just did. I don't know. Look, we're an hour and 15 in. I might seriously cut this part out, but I have to tell this story because it was one of the worst things ever for Dragon Age Origins. I thought it was weird that they have, like, the really sort of bad, I guess, underwear model, like the loins that come off when you unequipped armor. Yeah. And so I'm like, well, I was like, well, maybe it would just be better if, like, that wasn't.
Oh no! Did you get the mod?
I tried one of the nudity mods because I'm like, let me just see what's going to go on with this. But you have to remember that there are other sequences in the game when they put characters into the naked texture, right? Which is underwear. Okay. So I'm thinking, like, okay, I don't want to see a bunch of dicks and a bunch of tits all the time. I just think it would be like, you know, The Witcher has pretty well done love scenes and they're naturalistic because it has nudity. Like, let's just do that and that'll be fine. Okay. Well, number one, it replaces, there are more sequences of quote unquote nudity in Dragon Age Origins than just the romance sequences. One of them is in the section where you're dealing with the Daedalus clans, the elves, and you have the werewolf subplot, right? And when you choose to cure everyone who is a werewolf, they all convert back into humans with no clothes on. and the person who made this mod for some reason thought it would be correct to have the anatomical version of the male models just have, like, permaboner. So it's just, like, full-on erection. And so you heal all of these people from their werewolf status, and it's just an army of erect dicks just facing at you. It's just like, and they're all dudes. Like, apparently no women got turned into werewolves. So it's just like, it's like two dozen guys with hard dicks going like, thank you for curing us from being a werewolf. And I'm like, oh shit, there's a lot of dudes with hard dicks. You don't need to be that thankful. Nobody thank me. I don't want anybody to thank me. And I have like a petite female elf character, and there's just like 15 dudes with hard dicks like staring her in the face. And I'm like, this just got real weird real fast.
That is probably the beginning of a porno.
Not
somewhere.
Only that, but like
we need to at the time,
I had a roommate who like tried to come into the room as I was playing that, and I wasn't gonna know how to explain that, so I literally like jumped out of my computer chair and like shoved the door closed, and I'm like, hold on, I gotta take this off the screen because there's no way I'm gonna be able to explain that to another human.
I heard so many stories of like that mod gone wrong. Like if you King Kaelin at the end of Return to Ostagar, raging boner while he's just dead. A lot of the prisoners. Yeah, I've heard of that one. That there's also the prisoners at Fort Draken, raging boners while they're dead. So like, but I haven't heard the werewolf one. That one's funny. Oh my gosh,
it's like from that point forward. Even though I know the mod's not installed, I'm just like kill everybody. Just kill everybody.
The werewolves forever need to die for their dick party. It wasn't worth it.
Oh, man.
Okay, we have gone off track a little bit.
That's okay.
But did we even talk about should romances be real? You said no.
Yeah, okay. Like, should it be elves and elves? I don't know. It probably shouldn't be, but I do appreciate that if you're playing that elven character and that's who Solas wants to romance in Inquisition, I just think it works. I don't know.
I agree, like, for the most part, no, don't have race-locked romances. But I think, like, one in a game, like, just Solas. I think Cullen, making Cullen human or elf, like, it kind of worked, I guess, but
yeah.
Whatever. But I think that having just one person to say, like, I only romance, you know, this race or that race, I think that can work. But if you have a whole cast of, like, some races do this, some races do that, it gets too complicated. People are going to get confused. And it suddenly, like, limits your playability, I think, a little bit.
It would limit it too much. And I think you're right. Like, I like the one limitation. It's like, look, Vivian doesn't romance anybody. Yes, some players are going to be mad about that, but it's realistic. You know, the one playthrough I had where, like, my character really got along with Sarah, I was like, oh, I didn't realize she's only romanceable with female characters. Kind of a bummer, but realistic. Solas only likes elves. Kind of a bummer, but it fits.
Mm-hmm. So that's my talk. I also want to talk about, like, best race for each game and each romance, but we ran out of time. I think in later on in February episode I want to talk more about romances, so we'll just save that for then.
Good tease for the February episode.
Yeah, wait for February, guys, wink. All right, so I think with that we have, how long did you say we're out of time essentially?
Yeah, we're out of time, folks. But we're good for I think we're good for this episode. We've covered a lot. This was such a fun episode. I liked talking about the fire sprites and some of the stuff that we got into. So we're good, though, right? We're good for this episode. We'll be back. We have a few more episodes. Like, we're starting to get a little more coordinated in planning the topics, so we know what our next few ones are going to be.
Yes. But that being said, if you have a topic you want to send to us, feel free to send it in. Like, we actually had a topic we were going to do for this one, and then we decided that the person's topic they sent in was so much better, so we obviously are doing that one. So if you have something you want us to talk about, see us talk about, whatever. If you want to hear more about loot boxes and Anthem, maybe we'll talk about that next time. I don't know. So either tweet at me at @Guildathon on Twitter, or you can send me a PM @UserGillanon on Reddit, or you can just leave a comment below on either Jordan or I's channel and we'll figure it out. You can also email me @Guildathon@gmail.com. Find me, throw it at my face or Jordan's face. We will get to it. So.
Yeah, people can find me on YouTube under The Exalted March.
And I just said all of the things I was found on, so. All right. Well, with that, guys, I think Dar es Shalom.